Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
I have been fed, that's a fact.
I have been fed, that's a fact.
My credit card purchases get me cash back.
My credit card purchases get me cash back.
No one else gets these rewards.
Sergeant, that is just plain untrue.
What in tarnation?
Sir, PenFed's PowerCash Rewards Card isn't just for military members. Anyone can get cash back on all purchases.
Ah, figgins! You've ruined my favorite song.
PenFed Credit Union. Visit PenFed.org/PowerCash. To receive any advertised product, you must become a member of PenFed, insured by NCUA.
Does anybody want breakfast? Guys, let's go. I'm leaving for McDonald's in 5 seconds.
Why do you start with that?
The Breakfast Stampede Meal. It's only at McDonald's, where there's a meal for every morning.
And nothing says morning like a classic sausage McMuffin with egg. Right now, get this all-time favorite for just $2 on the $1-$3 menu. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Hello, everyone. It's Barry here with another exclusive Collider interview. I am sitting with Todd Haynes, the director of Dark Waters. How are you doing? Are you just like running around like crazy
Running around a bit. It's all been good.
It's
How
nice.
Are you doing,
Barry? I'm doing very well. It's always nice to sit here and talk movies with just about anybody. But you are a filmmaker I deeply admire. And especially with this project here, it's a story that should be told.
Yes, that's exactly how I felt when it came to me.
So can you tell me a little bit about the process of this coming to you? Because I know that this had a very, very quick turnaround. So was that a new scenario for you, or is it something you've experienced?
It was crazy. When you actually think back that the thing that broke it was a New York Times expose from 2016. I mean, that's like yesterday,
yeah.
Right? Although it describes a story that had been going on for 16, 18 years prior to that, and a campaign by DuPont that had been going on for what's probably now about 60 years with the production of Teflon. But the story quickly became something that Mark Ruffalo became aware of and Participant Media. And Mark and Participant had worked on Spotlight
mm-hmm.
not that long before. And people were coming to Mark, who's an activist and engaged in environmental issues and water issues, and said, you got to look at this. And he did. And he immediately reached out to Rob Ballot, who is the lawyer from Cincinnati who the story is about and who Mark plays in the movie. And literally within a year after that story broke, 2017, there was a script. He sent it to me. I mean, this doesn't happen at
yeah.
this kind of speed in movies, right? You know this.
Was the key to getting things going? I mean, is there any specific reason this got off the ground faster than other projects
do? I think they saw what incredible social relevance a story like this has, right, with everything that we're facing today.
Mm-hmm.
And the magnitude of the story is so shocking, from how it begins with a single sort of American beloved product, Teflon, and a famous chemical company behind it. How much it began just in sort of local issues of the water systems in the Midwest. And then it kept spreading and kept spreading and kept spreading because of our anti-regulatory system, and has ultimately spread across the globe. And PFOA, which is the chemical at issue in the story, is now in the blood of 99% of all living creatures on the planet. So it's nuts.
I watch so many horror movies. Like, this is the type of stuff that keeps me up at night.
Seriously. This is a true life horror story.
Have you been hearing a lot of comparisons to Erin Brockovich? Because it very different stories and both very much well worth telling. But what would you say to someone out there who is thinking, well, I saw Erin Brockovich. Why am I going to watch this one?
Erin Brockovich is a great film.
That it is.
A beautifully made film and a very engrossing story with an incredible and charismatic woman at the center of the story. In many ways, this is a more nuanced and subtle, and in some ways it feels more like the stuff of real life, even though, of course, Erin Brockovich is a true story and she exists and she had all of those qualities. But Rob Ballad is an unexpected hero. He's not the kind of guy that you expect to take on systems of power because he came from those systems of power. He was a criminal defense attorney defending the chemical industry. And believed in regulation and believed that there was a way that industry and regulation could coexist. And then sort of happened into like all the great, I think, whistleblower stories are about people who come out who are in the dark. And the story starts to form and get bigger and bigger and more astonishing and more infuriating, right? And that rage fuels the fight.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happens with Rob.
I feel like these are very important true stories to get out there. But one of the – I'm going to answer my own question. One of the things that I appreciate about having both of them too is they're two completely different types of individuals.
Yes.
She – when she walks into the room, she makes her presence known. Whereas he is like much more quiet and keeps to himself. And I just feel like having both of those examples out there can tell anybody, it doesn't matter who you are, if you believe in this cause, you can make a difference.
Absolutely. And I think no one's seen Mark Ruffalo quite embody the skin and bones of a guy like this, of Rob Ballad. You know, someone emotionally guarded and kind of hunched over and kind of lost in a perpetual frown, who kind of finds his voice and finds his life's work through accidentally, right, through circumstances that come upon him. You know, Erin Brockovich, you sort of think she'd be capable of anything the minute you meet her. Mark emerges through the character of Rob Ballad and sort of finds out who he is, you know. And I found that to be so moving and also so painful because people who are out there truth-telling, they get stigmatized, right? And the power systems start to push back against them. And threaten them, and they enter a perilous place, and that's what makes them even more astonishing, their work.
Did you always know that he was going to play the lead role? I mean, he always know ever since he first signed on? Because I don't think we reported it until right around this time last year.
What's cool, I think, is that Mark wanted to shepherd this whole project into being from the vantage point of a producer. And really believed that the story needed to be told and didn't want to sort of push himself necessarily as the leading sort of banner name attached to the actor. But he was, and that was always a given. I swear to God, when people first see him in the movie, they don't even know it's Mark. We've even had people talk about the prosthetic makeup that he wears. Of course, he wears no prosthetic makeup. It's all acting.
There's something about the way
jowl,
he frowns, and it did make me think twice.
I know. It's really astonishing.
Did you see any of just, you know, the physical preparation he went through to kind of make that happen?
Absolutely. I mean, what was so remarkable for me as a director, I think for the actors, for the entire creative team on the movie, is that we surrounded ourselves with the real people. We were in the real places. We were in Cincinnati. We visited West Virginia. We had these people on set They were our advisors, you know. And they come, they cross the class divide from an Appalachian farmer in Parker, outside of Parkersburg, West Virginia, all the way to the guy who runs, ended up becoming the managing partner for Taft Law, one of the most prestigious law firms in the country and definitely in the Midwest, and played by Tim Robbins. But it was so remarkable to see Rob spending so much time with Mark. And Mark watching him and internalizing him and interpolating him, you know. And the other amazing thing is to watch the real Rob Ballot start to uncoil himself as this was happening. He started to kind of come out of his shell and feel the weight of the world lifting from his shoulders, because finally his story is going to be told and seen by the world vis-a-vis Mark Ruffalo, right, and this film. And he starts to look like this – you see how handsome he is and how he has a little glint in his eye. And there's almost nothing that made us feel better about watching us relieve him of the burden that he'd been carrying single-handedly for
so many
years.
What a wonderful kind of like 1-2 punch with his work. It's like he did accomplish so much, but now the fact that this movie exists, it's like a whole nother wave of it.
Exactly. I mean, he said to me when the New York Times article landed, he said to me and Mario Correa, one of the writers on the script, when we drove with him from Cincinnati to Parkersburg, he said, when that article landed, I knew at least they weren't going to kill me. You know, like the isolation these kinds of people are put into, the danger zone that they enter into, the physical illness that he acquired, which still is never sufficiently diagnosed, and you're taking on one of the biggest chemical companies in the world. It's hard to not have some conspiratorial or paranoia attached to that. This relieved him and unburdened him in ways that we still see.
Hearing you describe so many of those features of him is making me think of a lot of your past work, just like the idea of dealing with isolation and someone dealing with like something that's physical and they can't really put a finger on what it is. Do you think that this movie kind of landed in your lap at the perfect time, or do you think you could have made Dark Waters, you know, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago?
It's funny. Mark has been sort of responding to that very question in Q&As we've been having. And I agree with him that sometimes there's sort of a zeitgeist that almost beckons projects to come to the fore at the time that they do. Mm-hmm. You know, there's something in the air that makes them necessary to happen when they happen. And I do feel like just the environmental issues that our country is confronting and heading into an election year and the ways that our regulatory system has so catered to the needs of industry, how much money and big business have dominated our economy. These are all things that make this an incredibly relevant story to tell and something that really we all felt really needed to be told. And that's one of the reasons why it was happening. It happened as quickly as it did.
It was interesting seeing this so soon after I went to TIFF and I saw that documentary that Ellen Page had made. It is about environmental racism. It's called There's Something in the Water. And it's her back in her hometown in Halifax and just exploring that. And I don't like they're different scenarios, but they go hand in hand. And it just shows how widespread these issues are.
Exactly. Flint, Michigan. I mean, just on and on and on.
Yeah.
We can go on and on and attach these relevant stories because it's a systemic problem. Mm-hmm. And you're going to see all kinds of specific examples cropping up in all these different places. And you can only focus on one thing at a time. And we wanted to enter this story dramatically and with compassion about the people involved and make it something that people could really experience and feel for.
Yeah. What is it like condensing? I mean, I guess this was essentially almost 2 decades worth of research and work, because you can't fit it all in there. So was there any specific part about, you know, what happened in this whole process that you just hope people know about that maybe you couldn't include in the movie?
I think we hit the main points. I mean, there's no question, exactly as you state, you know, a complicated legal narrative like this. Rob Ballot has actually just written a book called Exposure that really and really compellingly lays out the far more complex full story. And we had the dramatic task of trying to make it into something that could be experienced by an audience in a single viewing, where I think the best kinds of whistleblower films you follow the overall momentum and the trajectory forward. And then the 2 steps back, 1 step forward process that always happens, right? But you can't possibly maintain and understand every single aspect of either the legal discourse or the journalistic discourse, if that's the theme of the film. But it's all there, and you feel like it's being supported on solid ground. Mm-hmm. But that's not really the point. The point is to watch this overall progression that real people take and risk their lives over. And I think that's what we tried to accomplish.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. As far as the journalism and the legal jargon goes, though, is there any particular bit that you found the hardest to convey clearly, where you had to workshop it a little in order to get it to screen the best way?
This was really the brainchild of Mario Correa, the second screenwriter who came on. Our first screenwriter got busy shooting a movie of his own, and we brought Mario in, and it was fantastic. But the way – the centerpiece of the film is really the presentation of the story that Rob has investigated through the discovery process, that really is the shocking backstory of DuPont and Teflon, right? They're knowing history of polluting and dumping the toxic byproducts of PFOA into the water systems and into the air. And so you see him going through all the material and researching, but you're kind of kept at a distance from it. And then finally he lands in his kitchen one night with his wife, and he's throwing away his Teflon. And she's like, "Rob, what's going on?" And he says, "I got to tell you what's been going on." And they sit down at the kitchen table, and he starts to tell her the story. And it sort of intercuts with – it goes back to his process of discovering the story and putting it all together. But he tells it first to Sarah, and then we intercut with him telling it to Tim Robbins, and then to Victor Garber, who plays the lawyer from DuPont. And it's a particularly – it's sort of the centerpiece of the film, but it's so important, you know. And I think what we wanted to feel is that the audience was ready to hear the story when it finally lands.
How many times do you get to shoot a scene as intense as that? Because that, to me, is one of the highlights for Mark Ruffalo and also for Anne Hathaway from a performance perspective. Yeah. But it looks like, you know, that's one of those things where it takes a lot out of someone.
Oh, yeah.
So
absolutely.
Is it a, you know, try to shoot that and get it in the can as quick as possible?
Well, the sheer amount of lines that Mark had to memorize and present to her, but do it in a – you know, balancing that thing where he's not an actor, he's not an activist, he's a lawyer, and he's in the present tense of his own discovery process. And so we wanted him to be very present and very measured about the way he described it and told it to the, to his wife. But he had to recite pages of dialogue. And I just couldn't – I sat there and I was like, holy shit. You know, he has it all. He's done it. He's done this. He's so prepared. I mean, the guy is so conscientious and so devoted and such an incredibly warm and, you know, just sympathetic and empathetic presence on set.
I feel like you can totally tell.
You can, right?
When someone has that quality, I feel like no matter what role they're in, it kind of like radiates off the screen and you feel it.
It's really true.
Definitely feel it from him.
Yeah.
How do you go about, as far as the visuals go, making, you know, rifling through papers something, you know, exciting? And even boardroom scenes. You have a couple boardroom scenes that really just, you know, up the energy of the movie when you're essentially just shooting a whole bunch of people sitting at a table.
Yeah. You know, I try to sort of set up this style that – this visual style, this visual language, sort of the sort of temperament of the movie – that had a sort of restraint, that had a sort of emotional coolness, because it reflected Rob, and it also reminded me of the way some of my favorite films, like from the 1970s, that Gordon Willis shot, you know, with Alan Pakula, Parallax View, Clute, and of course All the President's Men, among all the other amazing things he shot in the 70s, have this observational sort of elegance. And it trusts the performers. The frame trusts the performances and the material and lets the frame come alive with what's happening with great actors. And I had great actors. And I, you know, looked at those movies for inspiration and sort of feeling secure. Yeah, we can trust our audiences. We don't have to cut and be all flashy and like, you know. And I think that comes through, and I think it's true to Rob a lot.
This is like one very specific thing that I notice, and I hope I can kind of like pinpoint the right scene without spoiling it for everybody. But there's one particular boardroom scene where Tim Robbins has like an exceptional moment. And it's a moment that I would assume a director would be getting closer and closer and closer on the person talking in order to up the intensity. But no, you like in the heat of his speech, you go back to a wide shot and whole and see the whole room.
Right.
I'm just curious, what was the thought behind that particular choice, because I was surprised how well that played.
Yeah, thank you. That's nice. It was a long and complicated scene with many different parts. It's really also where Rob really is there to convince the partners at his firm to take on this massive class action case. This is a law firm that had never taken on a class action case. They're not plaintiff's attorneys. They're defense attorneys. And so it took a lot of convincing, and it was going to challenge the reputation of what this law firm stood for. And so we covered it amply. It's a 5-minute long scene in the movie. But I was always so happy to hear when we were testing the movie and we were showing it to audiences that one of their favorite films of the scenes of the film was this one.
Absolutely.
It was the least visually – potentially the least visually compelling. But I think the framing works, the triangular room that it was reflected by, the actual interior of the True Taft offices, this architecture that that we honored in the set we built to match that. But really, it's the performances.
It is.
You know, it's William Jackson Harper, it's Tim Robbins, and it's Rob, and it's Mark Ruffalo.
William Jackson Harper's having quite the year too. I love seeing him pop up all over the place.
Oh my God, he's so lovely. He can do anything.
That particular scene, it's like what he's saying. It's so important for the entirety of the company that it wasn't until after I watched it that I'm like I needed that.
Yeah.
I needed to feel
you
the
did.
Impact of that on every single person around that table.
Absolutely.
And yeah, I just love that particular
shot.
I also really wanted to ask you about working with Participant Media, and this is a very convoluted way to ask this question, but it's like we're constantly talking now about movies getting, you know, the budget to make it on the big screen, and it's only the biggest of the big and not these small movies. But Participant is a company that is always making movies with purpose and always helping to fund movies with value.
Absolutely.
Like that. So
Right. What
was your experience like working with them? And where do you see them going as a company in the future that could help the film industry?
Well, they're so rare as a studio that has the mandate of social justice-themed films. I mean, that's an extraordinary thing just there. We can all stop for a second and go, wow, that's extraordinary, right? But the fact that they've had tremendous success in many of these films, I mean, even just last year between Green Book and Roma, they're very, very different films.
Yep.
And maybe they divided or separated audiences, but you can't not admire the fact that both of these films pass through the hands of Participant, right? And they've been involved with Spielberg's films that have had social themes to them, and they acquire documentaries and they create documentary material. And so the breadth of their commitment is so serious and so evident in the films that they've done. But thank God, they've also had success, and that can fortify that mandate and take it further.
Absolutely. I mean, between them and Focus Features, it's like the second you put their name on a movie,
seriously,
you're going to get my attention.
Absolutely. I've been very, very lucky to stumble into that duo.
For sure. One of the questions that I've gotten in the habit of asking a lot of directors now, because someone recently brought up to me, it's like when you're an actor, you get to act on set opposite your peers and see how other people work. That doesn't necessarily happen with a director. So if you had the opportunity to be a fly on the wall of another director's set, who would you choose and why?
Man. Living, dead?
It could be either.
Oh, no. That's too hard. That's crazy.
I think the last person I spoke to picked – I think it was Kubrick.
Right. Oh wow. I mean, it's a hard one to settle on. I'll pick somebody more obscure.
Okay.
I would have Kubrick on my list. I would have Hitchcock on my list. I would have Scorsese on my list, no doubt. But Max O'Fools is one of my favorite filmmakers, and he was idolized by Kubrick. And Kubrick described Max O'Fools' camera as something that floats through walls. And Max O'Fools worked in Europe, and he did a handful of films in America. And then he went back to Europe and did his final film, Lola Montez, at the sort of the very end of the 1940s. But the films are so – no, I'm sorry. It was the 50s. The films are so exquisite. the way they're crafted. He also attracted very awesome, progressive-minded writers and actors to do extraordinary things together, bigger scale and smaller scale, in Europe and America. Letters from an Unknown Woman, Reckless Moment, and Caught are the three movies he made in America back-to-back in the 40s. And they are just among my favorite films. I can watch them over and over again, and I learn something every time.
It's one of the best kinds of movies right there.
Completely.
Thank you so much for your time today, guys.
Carrie,
Dark Waters in theaters November 22nd. It's a good day. It's my birthday. So
it's Mark Ruffalo's birthday.
I didn't know
Mark Ruffalo's birthday.
I didn't know,
Barry.
I shared a birthday with Mark Ruffalo.
That's not bad.
I will happily take it.
Scorpio.
All the good vibes go into your movie right
Completely.
Now. So
I'm down.
Check it out when it hits theaters again. Thank you so much for your time today.
Much.
We are going to have more exclusive Collider interviews coming your way real soon.
It's that little Chico Pitbull, Mr. 305, better said Mr. Worldwide. And I'm here to tell you about my new podcast, From Negative to Positive, brought to you by my friends over at State Farm. I believe that to have success, you got to play the game so that the game doesn't play you. You know, the biggest risk you take is not taking one. It's very important that you make sure that you make the most out of your money, especially when it comes to insurance. State Farm offers surprisingly great rates. They have great agents standing by helping you personalize your coverage. All this is backed up by award-winning, easy-to-use technology. It's a great price with an even greater service. When you want the real deal, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Does anybody want breakfast? Guys? Let's go! I'm leaving for McDonald's in 5 seconds.
Why didn't you start with that?
The Breakfast Stampede Meal. It's only at McDonald's, where there's a meal for every morning.
And nothing says morning like a classic sausage McMuffin with egg. Right now, get this all-time favorite for just $2 on the $1-$3 menu. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.